Government Operations and Elections Committee will come to order. We're going to start out today in order. We'll start with House File 2861. Representative McElfetrick, come to the table, and I will move that House File 2861 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. To your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, and thank you for hearing our bill this morning. This bill is the result of a problem that was brought to my attention by one of the townships in my district. In rural Minnesota, people need and are very grateful for the emergency first responders in their communities. As you know, in a lot of Minnesota, the hospital is a fairly distant location, and that makes the EMS crew even more critical. Under current law, cities and townships can contribute to hospitals. Is that going to be better?
Yes.
Thank you, Rick. The cities and townships can contribute to hospitals that serve their areas. This bill would expand that ability to include medical service agencies that include first responder units, ambulance services, paramedic units, and similar emergency service providers. Since these services are critical, the local governments have a vital interest in their viability, and therefore the ability to make donations to these entities becomes very important to them. By definition, these personnel must be properly trained and licensed according to current law. The voters would need to approve any donations that would be made at their annual meeting, and it should also be noted that this is an option for donation rather than a mandate. Rob Vanasek from the Minnesota Association of Townships is here to give more detailed information.
Welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rob Vanasek on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I note your schedule is lengthy, so I'll keep it short. Townships are creatures of statute. We're unable, unless state statute explicitly allows us to do something, we're not able to do so. So we're seeking the local option. It must be first authorized by the local town board to allow this donation to take place. The Minnesota Association, Ambulance Association, does support the bill. I'll leave it to that and stand for questions.
Are there any questions for either testifier? Anybody else that needs to testify from the public on the bill? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion on House File 2861 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
The next on the agenda is House File 2829, Representative Vogel. And I'll move that House File 2829 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that yesterday you heard a similar bill about Dodge County, only this is a little different. And so what we're going to do is we're just looking to, for three counties, Kandy, Ojai, Swift, and Lyon County, have approached me and asked to go to appointing the positions of auditor, treasurer, and recorder. And I have the administrators and county board representatives here if we have any questions, but otherwise it's the same as what was done last year.
Okay, we've seen this bill several times in different forms. So is there anybody that I appreciate you respecting your time, Representative Vogel, and is there anyone that needs to testify or wants to testify? Any questions from members? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion on House File 2829 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And this rate will be able, will be finished by 9:30. So we're going to move on to House File. Is she here? Is Representative Lohmer here? I don't see Representative Lohmer, so we'll skip the agenda and move to House File 2404, Representative Scott. Representative Scott, I'll move that House File 2404 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. To your bill.
Thank you,
Madam Chair, and thank you for hearing this bill. I brought with me some testifiers on behalf of the bill. As you know, this committee should have been in receipt now of some recommendations from the Commission on Metropolitan Governance Oversight. And one of those recommendations was for staggered terms for the Met Council members. We believe this would create some continuity among the members as far as their institutional knowledge, and would cause them to be less reliant upon staff. So that's what this bill does. It it recommends that there are staggered terms for those members. And with that, Madam Chair, I would turn it over to my first testifier, County Commissioner Carroll. Oh, you know what? I have an amendment to get the bill in the shape I need it to.
I will move the A1 amendment. I was just going to ask you about that.
Thank you.
Did you want to mention briefly what that does?
Right. It's just a technical amendment, and Ms. Dyson, I'm sure, could tell you a little bit about that. It was just a piece that was left out in the original bill.
Does anyone have questions for Ms. Dyson? Looks technical to me.
Okay.
Any questions regarding the A1 amendment? All those in favor, then, of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. We will move on to your witness, and if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
I'm Carol Ledoux. I'm County Commissioner for Anoka County. I'm very glad that Representative Scott has brought this to the floor, because it is really needed. We are very anxious to see the terms of the members of the council be staggered. This will allow for greater continuity, hopefully better transparency, and I think more authority of the members of the council rather than relying on staff, internal staff, for their direction. As we know, it's a very large learning curve to become a member of the Met Council. This allows for members that are already seated to help the new members become acquainted with the standards and practices of that council. And that refers to the institutional knowledge that Representative Scott has mentioned. It also allows, it's just a good idea not to have a council turnover and have all new members at the same time. We know that counties and cities use this as standard procedure to not have an entire board or an entire council have to be seated and be brand new. I strongly urge that you pass this, and we would like to see this change implemented.
Thank you. Representative Scalzi has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and maybe the testifier or Representative Scott can tell us if this differs from the bill that has passed in the past. I know we passed one, I think, maybe 3 years ago or so, and it was vetoed by the governor then. It passed both the House and the Senate, went through all the procedures, and we all agreed with it, and then it was vetoed. Is this very different, or is it pretty much the same?
Representative Scott.
Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi, this is very similar to that. In fact, that was Representative Sandra Peterson's bill, and I did work with her. It's not identical, but very similar in nature. So.
Okay, we'll move on to the next testifier then.
Thank you.
And again, if you could just identify yourself for the tape before you begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Fries, and I'm an employee at Scott County in the Community Services Department. And I'm here today on behalf of Scott County and SCALE, which is the Scott County Association for Leadership and Efficiency. My department at Scott County interfaces with the Met Council. We manage parks and trails, the planning and zoning function, as well as the transportation function at the county. And we're here today to speak on behalf of this amendment. We feel quite strongly, as the previous speakers, that it is important to have continuity in the council membership itself from term to term. It helps with keeping the policy residing within the policy members itself, rather than having staff to provide that continuity. We think that if this amendment is passed, you will see more continuity over the years with the council's policy as it's presented and as we have to work with it. So we're very much in support of this legislation, and we appreciate Representative Scott's efforts on this.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Okay, we'll move on to the next one. And if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and we represent cities across the seven-county metropolitan area at both the legislature and Met Council. So we are the city watchdog at the Metropolitan Council. We do support the staggered terms legislation. This is a long-standing policy position for our organization, and it's one we've had consensus around often on many issues. We have a very diverse membership, and it's hard to get consensus on issues. This is one that we do have consensus on. I also, and for the reasons that Representative Scott identified with regard to having the continuity of the knowledge, many of the region's services are your bread and butter services like sewer and water and transit issues, and we think that this bill would do well to provide some continuity. I did want to point out that our policies also support having the chair's appointment be coterminous with the governor, and if I understand the statutes right, that is perhaps clarified in another area of statute, but if it's not, that's something that we would want to see be part of this legislation as well. And I think it's clear in other statutes, so that if you don't do anything here, that is the way the law works, but that's just something that our policies also support.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for the testifier? We're on a roll here, so if there's anyone, is there anyone else in the audience that'd like to testify for or against? Mr. Shetland, if you could just identify yourself for the tape.
Great. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Metropolitan Council. We are here to oppose House File 2404. It is the position of the council and the administration that the governor and the council remain in fixed coterminous terms that serve at the pleasure of the governor. The council has stated many times that we are interested in working with the legislature to talk about council governance. We stated this going back to the legislative auditor's report that was released a year or maybe 14, 15 months ago. And we know that the council governance is an issue that the legislature would like to discuss. If that is the case, we'd like to engage in a very comprehensive, inclusive discussion about all of the council's activities. I apologize, I missed Representative Scott's testimony. I was outside on a call with the chair just for a minute. But one of the issues for us is making sure that when you look at making changes to council governance, that you look at all of the council's roles and responsibilities. In the auditor's report, they did recommend staggered terms, but one of the weaknesses of the auditor's report was that it only looked at how it dealt with the transit activities of the council. It didn't look at our responsibilities as far as the Land Planning Act, our livable communities accounts, our wastewater service, how we work with the 10 parks implementing agencies here through the region. So we feel that if there's going to be a discussion about council governance, we need to have a long, thoughtful process to talk about how that would work, and the council is happy to engage with the legislature on any of those conversations if you'd like to do that. But as far as House File 2404, we do not support the bill.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I think there's a good point raised here. Eva, I do support the bill. I think I voted for it when we had it on the floor. I think it was it your Representative Sandra Scott? Peterson had it, and it was passed by the House and then vetoed by Governor Pawlenty, I believe. You know, it's Mr. Shetland's right. I mean, this is not going to be the end all and be all for what really does need to happen with governance. It's a baby step. I think it's helpful, but no one should be under any illusion that this is the beginning and end of what needs to happen. And I'll put a little plug in for a bill that Senator Dibble and I dropped in, which was to have a study commission over the next year to really come up with very concrete proposals for the legislature to deal with. You know, we would bring together the stakeholders of the Met Council, some legislators, you know, a good cross-section of, I think, 15 or 16 people, and they would really roll up their sleeves, get in the weeds, figure out what needs to happen. I think ultimately some kind of combination between, you know, elected local officials and appointees is a good direction to go, and I hope ultimately we do that. But, you know, this is still reform, small bit of reform, and, you know, I'll support it. Again, not knowing that this is not really where we need to go. Maybe the one time I've not supported the Met Council on
issue. Representative Hornstein and Mr. Shetnin, I think your idea has some merit to bring some of the stakeholders forward. I would encourage you, if you do pursue that option, to also include the city councils or the mayors of not just the inner city communities, but especially in the areas that are on more in the suburbs. Cities like that I represent, like Greenfield and Corcoran, who are who are probably more rural than metro, and how they're affected. So if you go that route, I'd encourage speaking with those folks who have probably a little bit different take than some of the metro areas. Representative Hornstein.
Chair, I think you're absolutely right. I agree with you, and I think it also needs to be mayors, city council members, as well as county commissioners. And there's, of course, other local people. We've had discussion about the Three River Park District. You know, there's many stakeholders that, you know, we may not even be thinking of that need to have a voice in how the Met Council is governed. So urban, suburban, city officials, county officials, us. I mean, it's a broad cross-section. Labor, chambers of commerce, a lot of people have a lot at stake in the Met Council.
Very true. Any questions for Mr. Shetnin? Representative Beard?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief comment about to commend Representative Scott for trying this very modest, tepid step at staggering terms. And I can't say that I'm surprised the Met Council is against it. They seem to be against everything this year. Having carried the transit governance bill, I can attest to that firsthand. Madam Chair, yesterday we had an interesting discussion about the Legislative Audit Commission reports and suggestions that he makes to the body and how difficult it is to actually take those and run with them. My first term here five terms ago, I picked up one on the Metropolitan Airport Commission and did a bill around some of the suggestions in the Metropolitan Airport Commission, which is very well run and largely universally admired by the people that they actually govern. But there were some suggestions on making things better. At the end of the day, through a governor who was my own personal friend, the only thing that survived of that bill was a half a page that staggered the terms of the appointed officials, which at the end of the day we agreed that was a good idea, and even the staff at the MAC agreed that having continuity carry over from administration to administration was actually very useful. And that was the only thing we got out of that Legislative Audit Commission recommendation, was staggering the terms. It's worked very well. As we say in the aviation world, the wings did not fall off. In fact, it actually made the plane fly a little better. I would urge support for this, even though the Met Council, surprisingly, is against it.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wanted to testify? Any other questions from members? Thank you. Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2404 be recommended to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We will move back to House File 1492. Representative Lohmer, I will move the House File 1492 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. Thanks, Representative Lohmer. You may begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1492 comes before you today as a request from the Minnesota Association of Marriage and Family Therapy and their 1,900 members statewide. Marriage and family therapists are requesting a seat at the Minnesota State Advisory Council on Mental Health. The State Advisory Council on Mental Health was established in the Comprehensive Adult and Children's Mental Health Acts of 1987 and 1989. The council provides advice and recommendations to the governor, legislature, and state agencies on policies affecting people with mental illness and children with emotional disturbances. All council members are appointed by the governor and serve four-year terms. Marriage and family therapists are one of the core mental health disciplines practicing in our communities across the state. They treat a wide variety of clients from a relationship perspective that incorporates family systems. They're trained and licensed to work with individuals, couples, and families. They provide a valuable service to a wide variety of Minnesotans, including veterans and their families. I have here with me today Mr. Henry Erdman, who represents practicing marriage and family therapists, to answer any questions. I encourage the committee to adopt this language to provide the State Advisory Council on Mental Health with a professional perspective of marriage and family therapists. Thank you.
Do you want to speak as well?
Sure.
If you could just identify yourself before you start.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Henry Erdman. I'm here today on behalf representing the Minnesota Association of Marriage and Family Therapy. We'd like to thank Representative Lohmer for her diligent work on this effort, and we encourage the adoption of this modest proposal to provide a voice to 1,900 practitioners statewide on state policy on mental health.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Anybody that wanted to testify from the audience for or against the bill? Seeing no testifiers, seeing no questions, I will renew my motion that House File 1492 be recommended to pass and be placed in the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Lohmer.
Thank you.
I believe Representative Anderson is here, and he is just out in the hall. Oh, he's here. I'm sorry. Representative Anderson? Senator Anderson, I will move that House File 2398 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I see there are lots of amendments here. How did you want to proceed here?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Yeah, we have several amendments. I also have an oral amendment to give to the committee.
Did you want to since there are so many, did you want to explain your bill first, or did you want to tackle the amendments first?
Let's do the amendments first to get the bill in the proper order, Madam Chair.
Okay, which one would you like to start with?
The A14 amendment.
I'll move the A14 amendment. I'll give members a second to find it. And if you want to talk a little bit about that, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This amendment was brought about as a result of the biodiesel mandates expiring at the end of 2012. We have agreed to extend that deadline. And what this amendment does is add on lines 1.12, it was brought to my attention from some of the shipping people up on the Great Lakes that for some reason marine diesel fuel is not compatible with bio. So they had asked for that exemption, that additional exemption for ships on the Great Lakes. Salties, I believe they call them. So that's the purpose of that amendment, Madam Chair.
Any questions for Representative Anderson? Okay, seeing none, I guess is there anyone in the audience that needs to say anything? Doesn't look like it. All those in favor of the A14 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Representative Anderson, what would you like to take up next?
We have the A16 amendment, Madam Chair.
A16. I will move the A16 amendment. To your amendment.
Madam Chair, that has to do with the commission we're trying to establish to come up with some of the framework and to find a location and study the possibility of a dairy research and education facility in Minnesota. And there was concern expressed about growing government, and this amendment was brought forth so that if the commission does not make any progress in the next 5 years, it will be sunsetted. It was agreed that if this doesn't proceed in a timely fashion, that it would be not a continuing commission of state government. So this would be a sunset provision on that commission to study the dairy research promotion facility.
I like sunsets, Representative Anderson.
I hope you would, Madam Chair.
would represent, oh, what, Representative Winkler's not here to comment. Any questions? Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, I appreciate your sunset provision in there. That's helpful to the concerns that that I've expressed. I may want to go just a little bit farther, but we'll discuss that later on. This is a good start.
Thanks, Representative.
Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A16 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Amendment prevails. Which would you like to move next?
But Madam Chair, I'd like to offer an oral amendment on page 4. I would like to strike lines 3, 4, 5, and 6 on page 4.
I will move an oral amendment to strike lines 4.3 through point 4.6. Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, this was brought to our attention. There was some concern about whether noxious weeds were being taken care of. We are still in the process of working on this situation, and the DNR is being cooperative, working with townships, counties, and cities. And if possible, we'd like to not have this fee system enforced, but we want to make agencies accountable. And if citizens make a complaint about noxious weeds, thistles is the main problem, we'd like to do it that way instead of having this fine system in statute. So we want to continue working and try to do this by an agreement.
Representative Anderson, Mark Shepard has a technical suggestion. Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Anderson, it appears that lines 4.3 to 4.6 are the only new language in that whole section, so I think it could be expressed by just saying delete section 3 from the bill.
I will incorporate that change. Representative Nelson?
Not to correct a good Mr. Shepard, but on page 3, on line 3.32, there's an A that's added there. Is that needed, or if we delete that whole section 3, do we need to put that back in?
Mr. Shepard?
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, I think the A would not be needed because Representative Anderson's amendment is proposing to delete all of what is now called B. So it could, okay. I think deleting the whole section would accomplish what he'd like to do.
Thank you.
Representative Scalzi?
But Ms. Chair and Mr. Shepard, if you delete the whole section, aren't you deleting the part that describes it as a misdemeanor or a violation? That would stay the same. Thank you.
Any other questions? All those in favor of adoption of the Pepinoral Amendment to delete Section 3, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Representative Anderson.
We're getting there, Madam Chair. The A12-0736 amendment is a department amendment that just makes some technical changes to the overall bill. I don't believe anything there is substantive. It's just the technical changes in the bill requested by the Department of Agriculture.
I will move the 0736 amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Representative Anderson?
And one more, Madam Chair. The A18 amendment is our way of dealing with deadlines. We are, there were some sections in there that were going to be in civil law, and their calendar was very full as well, so we were going to delete those sections to move on the bill to your committee, and that's the reason for the A18 amendment, Madam Chair.
I will move the A18 amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A18 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, thank you. The sections of the bill that I believe your committee is wanting to look at have to do with, at least one of them anyway, with the Dairy Research Promotion Facility. And I'd like to call a testifier down to discuss that with the committee and explain the reasons for that, and to also talk about the sunset provision, if you care to, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson, which amendment will we be looking at?
Are we? I'm we sorry.
I still have two amendments in my packet, the A-12 and A-15.
The A-15 amendment, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, the A-15 amendment is no longer needed, being we deleted, had the oral amendment. I'm sorry about that.
The A-12 amendment, Representative Anderson? He deleted. He doesn't need that. He's not offering that.
In my... The A-12 was a department amendment.
Should we pass that?
As I...
Mr. Shepherd will explain.
Madam Chair and members, it appears to me in a quick glance like the A-12 amendment is dealing with the vessels on the Great Lakes, and it looks like the substance of the A-12 has already been adopted by the committee and as part of A-14.
I see.
Thank you. So you are done. You are done then with your with the amendments, Representative Anderson.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I didn't hear your question.
Are you done with amendments at this point?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay. We'll move on to, well, you know, actually, Representative Anderson, is your witness going to present the bill, or did you want to say more about the bill before you had him testify, or how did you want to proceed?
Well, let's start talking about provisions in the bill. We're done with amendments, correct?
We're done.
Chair?
Okay. As far as I know.
Okay. So if it's your prerogative to talk about the bill now, this section would be the one that is of interest to your committee.
Maybe we should, before your witness goes, maybe we can have Mr. Shepherd direct us. I think there's a sheet in our packet somewhere that directs us to which sections we should be looking at, but perhaps Mr. Shepherd, if you get it, would you be able to direct our attention to?
Madam Chair and members, the first cluster of sections is the one that Representative Anderson is about to explain in Article 1, Sections 34 to 38 on pages 18 to 21. This is the Dairy Research, Teaching, and Consumer Education Authority that that Representative Anderson is about to talk about. The other two things that may be of interest to the committee are Article 2, Section 10 on page 39, which extends the expiration date for a task force, the Food Safety and Defense Task Force. And then on Article 2, Section 29 on page 52, there is a reference to Commissioner of Agriculture rules in the context of regulation of misbranded food. And those are the only things that I identified, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. If you'd like to begin and start by identifying yourself for the tape.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Kevin Wally, representing the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Thank you for the opportunity to explain about the Dairy Research Authority. This is the product of 3 years of work of parties interested in the growth and development of the dairy industry on the private side. We've involved producers, processors, and suppliers to the dairy sector. On the public side, there's been the Department of Agriculture, the University of Minnesota, and the MINSCU system. The idea is to establish a research framework to support growth in the dairy sector. This is an $11 billion annual economic impact for the state of Minnesota, and this is a time of significant change in the industry. The notion is to bring together private and public resources in order to address research needs and provide that framework for growth and sustainability in the industry. Over a year ago, a group was called together under the auspices of the Department of Agriculture with significant participation from producers, from the processing plants, Land O'Lakes, First District out in Litchfield, all participated significantly and came up with this recommendation that we establish an authority that would undertake the process of identifying a site for a scaled-up research facility and bring together the best of our current research capabilities and private resources to carry this effort further down the road. So that's been our effort, and it's resulted in this piece of legislation that Representative Anderson introduced separately last year and is now part of this ag policy bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Simon.
Thank you. A couple questions. First, I know this isn't a fiscal committee, but what Does this have a fiscal note, or what do you think the cost might be?
Mr. Wally?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, we specifically made provision in here for there being, so there would be no fiscal note. There's specific language related to the participation on the board for this authority that they would not be compensated. That language is specifically included in the language.
Representative Simon.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, can you? Is there another place in state government, another analogy for those of us who don't serve on the Agriculture Committee? Is there another, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but is there another such organization or such kind of partnership that exists, just so I can get a sense of what the apples-to-apples comparison would be?
Mr. Wally?
Madam Chair, Representative Simon, I'm trying to think of a direct parallel. I know there are, you know, authorities that have been established in state law to carry out particular functions with private participants. One that comes to mind is the aquarium in Duluth. It's a public-private partnership, but it has nothing to do with agriculture. So that exists.
Any other questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to testify in this bill, the sections of the bill, particularly that affect government operations that Mr. Shepherd identified? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Greta Gauthier. I'm with the Department of Agriculture, and I can talk about the Food Safety and Defense Task Force. Madam Chair, this is a official federal, state, and industry working group that advises the Minnesota Commissioners of Agriculture and Health on food safety and food defense issues. The goal of it, when it was established, was to provide a communication forum between the food industry and the food safety regulatory agencies for things such as discussing and resolving issues related to roles and responsibilities, for identifying resources and resource needs, for communicating and educating each other, and for sharing information and data collection. The membership includes both the commissioners, representative of the United States Food and Drug Administration, representative of the United States Department of Agriculture, representative of the AURI, the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute, a representative from the University of Minnesota, and 9 members appointed by the commissioners who are health and food professionals, represent also general farm organizations, food-oriented consumer groups, and 1 person representing a local food inspection agency. These members serve without compensation, and they have 4-year terms. This was task force initially was established in 1990, and it operates under statute Chapter 28A. And currently right now, Madam Chair, the task force was set to expire, and they feel that the work that they are doing is important and valuable. There's no fiscal note with it, Madam Chair, and let's see. Currently, I can tell you that the task force is chaired by representative of the Cargill Corporation. So we would respectfully ask that we be allowed to continue this important advisory work in public policy. And I also have a list of the members here if you're interested in seeing that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
I'll pass.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm wondering, is there someone from the Department of Health that serves on this task force?
Ms. Gauthier.
Madam Chair, I'm Representative Scalzi. Yes.
Anyone else that would like to testify in the bill? Any other questions from members to the amended bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 2398, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Erdahl, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move your bill?
I move that House File 2025 be passed and re-referred to the Committee of Higher Education.
So moved. You have an amendment to Representative Rudolph?
I do. I'd like to move Amendment A5.
Do you want to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment adds the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Education to the task force, and it deals with eliminating compensation for task force members.
Sounds good to me. Anybody have any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. To your bill as amended.
This task force is created to deal with various issues, primarily career and vocational education, and came out of ideas that I've had in traveling to Finland and talking with people with the governor's job summit, in which there was expressed by businesses in Minnesota a crying need for more vocational career technical education. I visited the Anoka STEP program and viewed how they work. So we're looking for our ways to bring our K-12 schools and our vocational schools, our colleges, universities together into this area. And I would have liked to have just been able to sit down and figure out a way to do this myself, but as I explored options dealing with master's degrees, how to encourage more teachers to have master's degrees in their content area, and vocational career education, how to best implement this, to best integrate this. Frankly, I wasn't smart enough to figure everything out myself. It might come as a shock to some of you, but I couldn't do it. So the need of the task force is to work on this area. It is it does sunset when the report is given on February 15th, 2013. That's when the report is due. Then the task force would be concluded. I guess that's it.
Any questions for the author? Is there anyone to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, renew the motion to pass and re-refer to higher education.
As amended.
As amended, thank you.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. We'll move on to House File 2685, Representative Beard. While you're making your way up, perhaps Mr. Shepherd could direct us to the areas we should be focusing on.
Madam Chair and members, the provisions of House File 2685 that may relate to the jurisdiction of the committee that I noted were Section 10 on page 11 of the bill, which deals with some MnDOT contracting preferences and goals for targeted group and veteran-owned small businesses. Section 54 on page 46, which is probably the section that required re-referral to the committee, which requires the Commissioner of Public Safety to adopt rules dealing with motorcycle road guard certificates. Mm-hmm. And finally, Madam Chair, I just note that sections 61, 62, 64, and 70 deal with some Metro Transit issues.
Thank you. Chair. Representative Beard, would you like to move your bill?
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 2685, recommend it pass to be re-referred, I believe, to Ways and Means. And, Madam Chair, there are a few amendments that we I need to move, and I'll describe them. They're largely peace in the valley kind of technical things that needed to happen since we put this bill together on, Representative Nelson, what night was that, Wednesday? Wednesday night, yes.
Seems like a year ago.
Seems like a year ago, yes.
Okay.
So, Madam Chair, so I'd appreciate if you indulge me and let me move the A14 amendment, and I'll speak briefly to that.
Representative Beard moves the A14 amendment to your amendment.
This is some cleanup language that needed to clarify some issues for Department of Vehicle Safe Services and the proponents of people who restore automobiles, particularly really old cars, known as Pioneer Plates. I believe there's a unanimous agreement on this issue, and this will help clarify issues. Madam Chair, I should point out that five members of this committee are also on the Transportation Policy Committee and sat through lengthy discussions about these issues. I'll stand for questions if you wish.
Any questions from members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A14 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
Thank you. Madam Chair, the A15 amendment needs to be moved. And so I'll move the A15 amendment.
Representative Beard moves the A15 amendment to your amendment.
Madam Chair, this was a provision Representative Biskins was actually helping Representative Kahn with. And if you look on page 33, there is something there about appropriate tires. And that hour of the night, we could not agree what appropriate tires were, except maybe a peg for clever lawsuits to be hung on. So it was agreed we should strike line 33 and get the words appropriate tires out of the bill. That's what that does.
Makes sense to me. Questions? Representative Nelson.
Madam Chair, it's a plug for the square tire industry.
Funny.
Madam Chair, it was funny on Wednesday night. It's still funny today, yes.
All those in favor of the A15 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
And Madam Chair, the A16 amendment will not be necessary because I'd like to offer the A18 amendment, which is a little more inclusive and I think captures what we were trying to do with every city dealing with the possibility of having a new group of certificate holders called the Motorcycle Road Guard Group. And so every city is now included in the notification instead of just cities of the first class. So I'd move the A18 amendment and urge its adoption.
Representative Beard moves the A18 amendment. Any questions? The author. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A18 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion and prevails.
Madam Chair, if I can indulge the committee, I just want to get something on the record here for those of us that are interested in seeing this work. In the A18 amendment dealing with the road guard, there is a provision we're going to discuss in a moment. On rulemaking. Well, you know what, Madam Chair, let's wait till that point. We'll touch on that briefly because DVS and DPS have come up with a pretty ingenious solution to a small problem I thought we found. We'll talk about that in a moment. Madam Chair, the last amendment that I'm going to offer, and then I believe there may be one more, is the A19 amendment. Did we adopt the A18 amendment?
We did.
We did, thanks. A19, technical changes. This is just some cleanup stuff that Mr. Burris, excuse me, he works so well with us, we keep calling him a colleague, that Mr. Burris suggested we put in the bill that will help it line up and make its intent very clear. So I'd urge adoption of the A19 amendment.
Representative Beard moves the A19 amendment. Any questions? All those in favor of the A19 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I also have another amendment. I think that's the one that Representative Beard was talking about. On page 36, section 42, I believe is what it is, if Mr. Burris is here. I saw him. We talked about this earlier. This is a bill that Representative Moran carried, and it wasn't in the bill originally. We put it in it the other Wednesday night, and there was a question from the bus drivers and the bus manufacturers about the point system and having to deal with, and they wanted that part eliminated, and I told them I'd check into it to make sure that the people of the DPS that brought the bill forward, whether they were okay with it. They assured me that they were, and what this deals with is currently there's a point system on buses, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and if you have less than a certain number of points, the bus can still be used if there's safety issues, there are minor safety issues. But by eliminating this, as the bill does, the points that are striking the point system on there, it makes it a pass-fail system. If there's anything wrong with the bus, it can't drive, even if it's a minor infraction. And the, like I said, Department of Public Safety is comfortable with eliminating this, and the bus companies are happy with this, and they're the ones that asked me to do that. So I My amendment is to eliminate section 42 on page 36. And let me just double-check to make sure I got that right.
Representative Nelson moves to eliminate section 42 on page 36. Representative Beard?
Madam Chair, yes. We're having bigger discussions other places about rulemaking and how we can actually talk about those. This is one of those, I think, that backs off on some rules that had inadvertent consequences. And so I am wholly supportive of Representative Nelson's motion, if indeed the effect is that we can maintain a point system and get away from the pass-fail-only system. So I am supportive.
Any questions? Representative Simon?
No, not to this.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I think Representative Sanders might have a motion.
Representative Sanders?
Think about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a medium-sized oral amendment that I spoke with Mr. Shepherd about.
We only allow small oral amendments, so.
It's a smallish oral amendment.
Okay, thank you, Representative Sanders.
has to deal with page 49 of the bill, subdivision 2A, the civilian escort driver section of the bill. We had a probably too long of a discussion on a Wednesday night on this, but it was a good discussion that we had that we needed to start. It was an amendment carried by Representative Murdoch in the Transportation Committee. There's been some discussion between the interested parties, especially Manufactured Housing Association and those dealing with manufactured modular homes. I will offer the oral amendment, and then we can discuss it just a little bit. But it's on 49.10 after the or strike or, I guess you could say, on 49.10 strike or on 49.11 after road we would insert or. Not sure if you might need a semicolon there as well. Semicolon, insert or. And then add a third line that states, is anything other than manufactured or modular housing? So again, that's on line 49.10, strike or, on 49.11, insert or... strike the colon, insert a semicolon, insert or, and then on adding a third line, we would insert language that states, is anything other than manufactured or modular housing?
Representative Sanders, I believe you mean to delete the period and insert the semicolon?
Correct.
Is that correct, Mr. Shepherd?
Madam Chair, members, yes, and I Ms. Dyson and I will write this up with the correct punctuation for the committee records.
Thank you. Representative Sanders had some help. Had some problems with grammar growing up.
Yeah. Well, it's written very appropriately on the paper. It looked like it. anyway, Madam Chair, the purpose of this is, again, there's been some discussion since the amendment in Transportation Committee that we had. I know that there is... it's still an ongoing process, but the purpose of this amendment was dealing with rulemaking that was going on that basically was making it very difficult for manufactured or modular housing units to use civilian escorts. These were employees of the companies in order to escort modular homes to their destination. They manufacture roughly 6,000 of those, so it's a lot of modular homes that need to be escorted and moving throughout the state. Manufactured housing is the largest form of affordable homes in my district. I know it's important where these are manufactured in outstate Minnesota. I know that these are oftentimes some of the larger employers or you know some of the most significant employers in the district. The way that the rulemaking was going seemed to be very cost prohibitive to the manufactured modular housing industry. So we hope that this is language that we can continue to agree on and work on. I know that the rulemaking is still going on, but we need to make sure that that this form of affordable housing is still in that range, and that they can continue to move these houses without going through burdensome and over-regulated rulemaking.
Thank you, Representative Sanders. Your amendment has generated many questions.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Sanders, does this include garages?
Representative Sanders.
Madam Chair, the Representative Erdahl, the language says manufactured or modular housing.
Representative Erdahl, did you have a problem with grammar as well? Representative Erdahl.
I thoughts were coming through my head, but I decided not to say them. Probably wisely.
It's Friday, Representative Erdahl. I'm getting a little anxious to get out of here.
Yes, me too. Madam Chair, in my district, we do have a lot of modular garages that are constructed. Actually, I had one shipped out to my house. And you know, I would imagine present the same types of problems that Representative Sanders is alluding to here. I would wonder if he would object to adding four garages to it.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I don't. In fact, I think the language, you know, I'm kind of fine with being able to use civilian escorts kind of as is. I understand that, you know, again, there's agency that has some issues with that and wants to provide in-depth training and require, you know, in-depth large insurance policies and others along those lines. I guess I don't know. I kind of would, I guess, defer to the author of the actual bill and the chair of the Transportation Committee to see how far we're going to go with the discussion on this and what we will or won't include. But I know that there's been specific conversations, again, between the agency, the chair of the Transportation Committee, and the manufactured and modular housing industries.
Representative Beard.
Well, Madam Chair, I'll speak to the overall issue if you wish. First of all, I'd be supportive of the amendment. Let me say that. Madam Chair and members, I have another small bill we're pushing through here on rulemaking reform. This is a glowing example of why we need to, as legislators, assert ourselves back into the rulemaking process. Somewhere in the past, a few years here, there was an effort to kind of streamline the whole escort process, whether they're the people who escort funeral processions through the cities or whether it's people that do windmill blades from Duluth to Windham or whatever the issue. The whole thing has become a discombobulated mess, and so there was a group formed to actually talk about how we could bring some clarity to that and get away particularly from having to wait for the patrol to post jobs for escorting and things like that. Couldn't we have a certified training program to certify escorts to move over-dimensional loads through the state? And so that was kind of the genesis of why we got into a rulemaking in the first place. So rulemaking is underway. In fact, I think it's about to be posted. But alas, since we're not tightly overseeing the rulemaking process, rules have been promulgated that now are going to carve 6,000 to 8,000 trips a year right out of the deal unless they comply with new rules. Whether or not those are reasonable or not remain to be seen. They have yet to be published, but the committees should assert themselves, bring them back in here, and look at them for applicability and passing the common sense test and so on and so forth. In the meantime, a fix seems to be just to exempt the modular home escorts, who have never had any trouble doing this, by the way. These are not loads that extend over the center line or have to run the wrong way or anything like that. And so I'm going to be supportive of this amendment as this bill moves forward and ask you to adopt it today, and we'll continue the discussion as we go forward. If you want to have a more comprehensive discussion about rulemaking, I suppose we could bring that up and talk about it again. But for purposes of this morning's bill, the chair would just say, please adopt the amendment, and we'll just keep moving forward with the discussion.
Representative Beard, I think Representative Sanders was looking for direction about the words "and garages" being added to, incorporated into his oral amendment.
That was the discussion. Okay, I was over here doing something else. Oh, that was Representative Erdahl that was muddying the waters with garages.
Clearing them.
Madam Chair, for purposes of this morning's discussion, I will be okay with adding garages. If the garages I'm thinking about are the ones that are built at a factory and then trucked down the road after you buy them at Menards or Home Depot or whatever else. Yes, I would add that.
Representative Sanders, are you comfortable incorporating the change into your amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Shepard, would you report the amendment?
Madam Chair, members, I do, because I'm not familiar with this subject area, I have a question about the right way to express it. Would, if you just said or garages, it might be construed to apply to all garages? Is the term, so I'd ask a question, is the term manufactured garages, the is that an understood or correct term?
Representative Erdahl?
Madam Chair, I'm it's the same as the houses, so modular or manufactured. It's the same type of thing. And some of them are as big as the houses.
Okay.
Mr. Shepard?
In that case, Madam Chair, I would suggest Representative Sanders had said that it, his new Clause 3 would be, is anything other than manufactured or modular housing? And I would say, to add on to that, or manufactured or modular garages.
Madam Chair?
Representative Beard?
How about we just make it buildings? Because some of these modular units that move down the road are used for offices or temporary storage space, all kinds of, just make it buildings and we'll be good.
It is Representative Sanders' amendment. Representative Sanders?
Madam Chair, I'll defer to Chair Beard's suggestion. I think manufacturer modular buildings should work, if he agrees.
And Mr. Shepard, could you report the entire amendment?
Madam Chair, and I hope someone will correct me if I have it wrong here, but I believe that the amendment would be on page 49, line 10, delete or, page 49, line 11, delete the period, and insert semicolon or, and then page 49 after line 11, insert 3, is anything other than manufactured or modular buildings.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. We still have a few questions. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I feel uncomfortable adding this in here. As was said here, we had a lot of discussion the other night in transportation on this subject. The rulemaking process that's going on, once the rules are posted, there's a year and a half period that they get reviewed before they go into effect. I think the manufactured housing industry that was here testifying for this the other night are jumping the gun. I mean, they're basically gutting what we're already doing, the bill we passed to set up rules for this so that we can get the state patrol out of this business, get training programs set up and people trained. They talked about that these companies could send one individual to get trained and then they could train the rest of their people, so it'd be train the trainer type things. I'm uncomfortable with this. I said I'm going to be voting against the amendment simply because we have, once the rules are posted and it is a problem, we can then next year look at those rules in this committee and we can make the adjustments that we need to make in those rules. I think it's similar to a court case that's going on. We heard in Commerce the other day a bill that was going to get right in the middle of a court case, and we don't normally as a legislature, when there's a court case or a procedure going on, get in the middle of that until it's done. And I think this is jumping the gun and doing that same thing, getting in the middle of a rules-making process that we mandated here to be done before the rules are written. And so I speak against this amendment, and I think we should vote the amendment down, give the rules a chance to be promulgated, and then we can look at them and make those changes to the rules, which is our right to do as the legislature.
Thank you. We have several other questions. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not opposed to the amendment. I just want to know where we're drawing the definitions from, what is manufactured or modular buildings. I don't see a definition section in here. Where would it default in statute so we don't have the kind of confusion that even the committee's having as to what the buildings or structures might be?
Ms. Dyson, do you have the answer?
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, I was just conferring with my colleague Matt Burris. There is a definition in the statutes in section 327.31, subdivision 6, for manufactured home. And then it's a so it's defined there. This, the amendment that is before the committee right now does not refer to that definition, so it would be undefined in the amendment as it stands right now, but we can insert a cross-reference. Modular home is defined in section 272.02, subdivision 85. And again, that's not in the amendment pending before you, but there is one. Excuse me. But I don't think that the definition covers the broader buildings that you were discussing, the accessory and garage buildings. So the amendment could be, Mr. Burris had drafted a version that had the citations in it, but doesn't cover the accessory buildings that you were just talking about. So.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Again, Madam Chair, I just think it's important that we tie that back. So if we're trying to solve one problem, we don't create another on here, and I guess it would defer to the author of the amendment for his suggestion on how he'd like to proceed as far as defining what those structures might be.
Okay. Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I mean, this we felt was like... this amendment is a step in trying to move towards meeting the agency a little bit, because all we are doing is making a carve out for the manufactured modular housing. Again, because the B clause here is saying that civilian escort drivers may not operate under this, you know, if it's an overdimensional load that extends over the center line or roadway or is routed to travel a wrong way on a road. So again, we think that this is fairly broad with this one narrow exception. If we can't find language to accommodate Representative Erdahl, again, our language was we'd work with Mr. Burris and Mr. Shepard on the amendment that I had stated. I don't know if there's another time or opportunity for Representative Erdahl to continue to find exact language on that. But again, the point of this, and a little bit to what Representative Nelson was saying, if we're waiting till these rules are enacted, you know, we're basically putting, you know, the potential of putting 6,000 to 8,000 trips on ice until that these companies can get trained. And again, the training is you know, we heard testimony the other night, almost to the level of what a straight state trooper would get in escort. So it's significant training. It's requiring the driver to actually get an extensive insurance policy when they're already covered under their as employees of a company. So waiting for rules to be enacted sometimes is just a little bit too late, I think. And I think that when we see industries that are operating correctly, they're operating safely, and there are rules that would add onerous or burdensome regulations to them when they're already operating correctly within the law and safely, I think that now is the time to act on that.
Thank you. I think we'll just allow a little bit more time for Representative Erdahl and folks to meet with staff to see if there's some way to resolve the questions that we have. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, to Representative Sanders, my question was, did you want to include the references as were suggested by Ms. Dyson on this so that we don't have any question going forward as to what those structures might be?
Representative O'Driscoll, if we could just wait a minute, because that as Mr. Shepard mentioned, that referred to homes. So I think we still needed to do a little bit of work on making sure this language is right, or perhaps Representative Erdahl might want to pursue his concern at a later date. I see Representative Erdahl.
Yes, Madam Chair. I would recommend taking it the buildings out again. Going, if there's agreement... you know, just going back to the housing, that the original oral amendment, and dealing with this later on, I think I've talked to Mr. Burris and others, either before Ways and Means or in dealing with the Senate. I think that another cross-reference can be obtained to figure out how to do this. I think there may be definition somewhere, or we could do one, but maybe not today. I'm not interested in prolonging this for another hour or so. If that, I will withdraw my suggestion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Sanders.
We do have, if it's okay with you, I can amend my oral amendment basically to ask Mr. Shepherd just to substitute this written language that we have as the oral amendment, because it does include the citation there, and that way there will be clarification.
Okay, so Representative Sanders will remove his... What do I need to do? Remove his oral amendment. Representative Sanders
will substitute.
Representative Sanders will substitute his oral amendment with the A20 amendment. And we still have a question, Representative Quam.
Yes, I think that if you're looking at that, if you use structures instead of buildings, and you try to build in allowances, because in the rural areas there are many structures, large size loads that are run to farms. It's not just, you know, buildings, garages, etc., that would fit into the escort activity. And that was just my suggestion. So if there's work on broadening this, I would hope that they would be broad-minded enough to cover some of the things that happen on our rural roads. And it's not just what would be under definition of a building. I think structure or some other definition would be best, because I would almost hazard a guess there's more of that traffic in occurrence than modular homes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, I'm still not comfortable with the amendment that as it's modified, but I'm more comfortable with it taking out the garages and other things or expanding it. This is part gets back to the original reason why this flagging or escort driver bill was passed a few years back, is that we wanted to bring one set of standards for everybody doing this, so that again the State Patrol could get out of doing this and conform with stuff nationwide, standards nationwide, and if the more we expand this, the more exceptions we're having to this flagging rule that we passed a couple years ago that's now in the rulemaking process. And if we expand it too far with too many exceptions, we're just going to make that standards that we set moot, and the people that brought it forward to do it will just can ignore it also, because if we expand things too far. So I'm not comfortable with this amendment. I'm going to vote against this amendment. I think it's getting in the way of what we've got already going on, the process. There's an appeals process after the rules are published. They haven't even been published yet. People are jumping the gun, I think, on this, and I'm going to speak against this amendment, and like I said, we have time. Once the rules are published, we have time for an appeals process, and we have time as a committee to look at them. If we need to make changes to them, we can do that ourselves.
Representative Sanders?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this smallish amendment has gotten a little bit bigger, so I'll just withdraw the amendment at this time.
Representative Sanders withdraws the amendment. Back to you, Representative Beard.
Well, Madam Chair and members, this has been very instructional. I'm glad for just a little bit, because it kind of is an advertisement for House File 2169, the rulemaking bill that's moving through the process here, and it kind of underscores just how this works, and how we end up with rules that afflict our citizens that we have no idea what's going on. At this moment, there is a rulemaking process going on, and as I sit here as chairman of the committee, I can't tell you where it came from. I don't know how it got started, whether industry started it or the patrol started it or whether it is, but a rulemaking process is happening, and we're talking around the edges of it while it's happening, and I know it's been to an administrative law judge, so it was a contested rulemaking case. Rules are about to be published, and they're going to have consequences for about 6,000 to 8,000 trips a year, mostly generated from small-town Minnesota, hardworking people just trying to build stuff and sell things to people. And we're proposing to monkey with the way they've done business for 60 years. This is really important stuff, folks. So I'm glad we had this fascinating little discussion. Representative Sanders, thank you for pulling the amendment at this time. Within the next year and a half, These guys that have done this, civilian escort drivers, they're going to have to face a radical rework of the way they've done business. And I got to tell you, just as a common sense guy that sits here looking at the whole process, I got to ask you, why? Where did this come from, and why are these guys under assault? I just don't get it. Madam Chair, as Transportation Chair, of course, I'm the first point of contact for every aggrieved party out there. And I get calls every week. Folks have been pulled over, mostly commercial drivers, saying, where did this rule come from, and why am I being ticketed for, I don't know, guys who punch the clock without logbooks in their cab, or kids with lawnmowers and gas cans now violating some sort of a new hazmat rule? Where did that come from? Why is that a danger to society? Funeral escorts all of a sudden can't use flashing lights or can't block an intersection or an on-ramp like they've done for 100 years. The rules just keep coming, and they happen oftentimes going right past us. I'm not saying that's the rulemaking process's fault. We need to pay better attention to where rules come from. This has been very instructional because we're about to hit an entire industry that has never had a problem that anyone's documented to this chairman with a whole new set of rules that are going to cost them thousands of dollars and put many of them out of business. With that, I'll hold my comments on the rulemaking process. Thank you for offering the amendment. I'm sorry I don't want to move forward with it today, but this has been a largely non-controversial bill. I could see it becoming controversial. So with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to speak to those few sections of the bill that pertain to the jurisdiction of this committee, and perhaps we can move it on to Ways and Means. To that end, Section 10 of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson wants to interject here.
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with respect to my colleague and good friend, Mr. Representative Beard, Chair Beard, the rulemaking process that we're discussing here was one that we passed in law. It came through the Transportation Committee. It came through this committee also, having to do with flaggers and escort drivers. And we ordered them to do the rulemaking process, so it's not something that's coming out of the blue. Came out of a bill that was passed. I believe it was part of an omnibus transportation bill, either last year or the year before. But we ordered that rulemaking process. So to say that this is coming out of the blue strikes me as a little strange, because as I've served with Representative Beard on the Transportation Committee our whole time in the legislature. So I guess that we should let this, we order this process to go forward. We should let it go on. Once they're published, if they're bad, I promise Representative Beard that we should bring those back to Transportation and look at those, bring them back to this committee and look at those, and if they need to be adjusted, we should do it at that time before they go into effect, because they're not in effect yet. They won't be in effect for a year and a half till after they're written. So we're having this discussion about a hypothetical out there. We don't know what the rules say yet, and we're trying to change them before they're even published. So that's my comment.
Representative Beard. And I would Representative Nelson, back to you, Representative Beard.
Back to me. I would concur, Madam Chair. For instance, the gas cans and lawnmowers and kids getting pulled over, when I questioned the patrol about what in the world they were doing, they handed me a vote tally sheet where I voted aye on a bill on the floor that was supposed to be a simple technical conformance amendment. I did. I voted for it, not even realizing that this was going to be an outcome. And in this case, Representative Nelson's exactly right. We voted for a rulemaking process sometime in the last two or three years. That this is the result of that. And in a moment, I'm going to point out to you a couple more rulemaking things, and I'm going to underscore it and punctuate it so we can remember this conversation. Madam Chair, on Section 10, this deals with the jurisdiction here, deals with contracting preference goals. It's also known in the industry as the DBE legislation. Madam Chair, this is also in what we call colloquially the Transportation Omnibus Bill Number 1, which is currently sitting in Ways and Means. This language is identical in that regard. Yes, this is the DBE legislation in Section 10. Questions to that, Madam Chair? It was thoroughly vetted in committee and, like I say, passed last year and is back in Ways and Means because we didn't vote on it on the floor. The next section that falls under this purview is Section 54, the purview of this committee. Madam Chair, it has to do with, oh, look at this, rulemaking. There is, in this section, we've been asked to create a new category of certificate called Motorcycle Road Guard. This relates peripherally to the discussion we just had about other people controlling traffic on Minnesota highways. In this case, many times there are groups of motorcycles, thousands of them sometimes, that do a charity ride. These have become pretty popular over the last few years. Greater Minnesota, this has worked rather well. I know in our own county, Scott County, either the county deputies or they have, we used to call them cadets, I think they're a civilian adjunct of the Sheriff's Department that will go out and guard road crossings in rural areas when a lot of motorcycles are coming through. The proposal, when it was discussed in committee, Madam Chair and members, was to create a road guard certificate where qualified people would actually get trained and certified by the Department of Public Safety to become road guards to take care of this on a voluntary basis, since most of these rides are done under the rubric of nonprofit or fundraising adventures. They're usually not commercial enterprises. And so in Subdivision 5, Airline 46.29, there's that rulemaking word. We're asking the commissioner to adopt rules to carry out the provisions of this section. That will take probably a year or so. I know this is not a finance committee, but it does specify a fee to be levied under Subdivision 3. Madam Chair and members, the Department of Public Safety and Department of Vehicle Services already have a mechanism for taking a portion of a motorcycle registration and routing it through the different agencies. It's an interagency agreement. If you'd like them to come and explain that, I think we can actually make this money work, so the fiscal note will be basically null and void. We'll move some money from the motorcycle training account to pay for the rulemaking, which could cost as little as $2,000 if it's not contested. If it's contested, it could cost $30,000 or $40,000. Nonetheless, the fees then would pay back whatever the cost of the rulemaking is to that fund, so it'd be a transfer in and out. Largely, I think, a brilliant idea by DPS and DVS. If you'd like to vote on it or make it a statute, we could. I don't think it's necessary. But that's what this provision is, and I just wanted to flag the rulemaking process and know that they'll be working that out, creating a new certificate that does not exist at the moment, members, to be clear. So it's not like we're impinging on something that's already being done and making it change or go away. We're creating a new category where the people have been properly trained by DPS to actually flag motorcycles through rural intersections. One of the amendments we did adopt also did deal with cities. So if you're registered or recognized and organized as a city in this state, every police chief will get notification and has the option of accepting the road guards in their community or insisting that they do it with their own officers or civilian cadets or whatever. I wish I could remember the correct term for the adjunct group that sometimes helps with like county fairs and so on. We've given that option in that amendment that you adopted. Members in 61, 62, 64, and 70, there are several provisions here. Section 61 is a provision I'm very fond of, and I believe Representative Scalzi offered this one, and we gladly adopted it. 61, 62, reopens the replacement service, known also as the opt-out services for people, cities, and governmental units that may want to discuss operating their own transit service, particularly in the suburbs and exurb areas. That's 61 and 62. 64 is a provision that I had put in the bill. Because the MVEST forecast is to grow by about nearly $18 million over the next 2 years, part of the budget solution last year was to cut $1.65 million in 2012 and 2013. The $1.65 million has been cut from the opt-outs in 2012. This proposes to put it back in the second year of the biennium. Metropolitan Council has more than enough money because the economy is picking up to replace this $1.65 million and still have about $15 million of money they weren't counting on in their budget, and so that's what that is about. And Section 70 of the bill. This is a program, you remember there was some chatter here over the last couple of weeks about the legislature ordering the Metropolitan Council to raise fares by 25 cents. We withdrew that from the bill, and we offered an amendment that allowed the alternative or replacement service providers, also known as the opt-outs, to run a pilot program on distance-based fares. Madam Chair, there's been a lot of discussion that somehow the subsidies for the opt-outs has been disproportional. A large part of that problem has been that we have linked by statute that the fares, the opt-outs charge must be identical to whatever the Metropolitan Transit Commission is charging. It's a little more complicated than that. That's the simplified version. What this legislation would do would be to allow the opt-outs to do pilot programs to decouple their fares from the Met Transit's fare structure and actually do a distance-based fare. And that is the bill that pertains to this committee, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my only question on that I raised my hand for on was Section 70 right now was, my understanding, I'm looking at the language here, it doesn't limit it to opt-outs, or does this limit to opt-outs? I thought the Met Council testified the other night that they would like to look at possibly doing a project also in some of their areas that would meet this same mileage.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Nelson, for the clarifying question. Yes, that's exactly right. It was originally designed for the opt-out, the replacement service people that run particularly express buses over great distances, where the value greatly exceeds the fare that they're allowed to charge. The Met Council did ask if they could be included in that also, because they do run a couple of express routes, and we gladly invited them to participate in the pilot program as well. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to testify to any of the provisions that pertain to government operations and elections? Well, seeing no questions and no one wanting to testify, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that House File 2685, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail. Thank you, Representative Beard.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next, we'll take up 2828, Representative Murray.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I would like to move House File 2828 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
So moved. Chair Bill.
Madam Chair and members, the City of Albert Lea has a significant excess sewer capacity and wastewater treatment plant. We're working on an incentive plan here that would be created by the City of Albert Lea and the Albert Lea Economic Development Agency. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the history and then the goals of this plan. We're basically looking at creating an incentive plan that will help to create jobs, but more importantly, will help stabilize sewer rates for all users going forward. In 1980, the City of Albert Lea, with the assistance of state and federal government, constructed a new wastewater treatment plant. The plant was sized to accommodate a full-scale meatpacking plant, a turkey processing plant, and some other large industrial users. Neither the meatpacking plant nor the turkey producing plant is in operation today. And the loss of these two customers has left the city and its residents with a wastewater treatment plant that is operating at 50% of capacity. The fixed costs of this operation, though, still have to be paid, and this has meant a significant cost increase for all users of the plan. In order to stabilize these costs, the city would like to implement a sewer incentive plan to attract a larger user to locate in Albert Lea, or to help existing users expand. This plan would function in similar fashion to a tax increment financing plan. In general, the way this would operate is the city would offer a rebate of 25% of any new or increased sewer charges each year for a period of no more than 5 years. So if a new business expanded into Albert Lea, or a current business expanded and were to generate $100,000, for instance, of new revenue, the city would give a rebate of $25,000 of these charges. Since this use is generated on top of the existing operation, the marginal cost to produce this is very low and would not have any type of a negative effect on any current users. If we have seven industrial users right now in Albert Lea that account for the majority of this use, if we were to lose any one of the top three customers in this, it would be very hard on the remaining customers and residential users. This is about using the existing infrastructure to make it into a better plan for the residents of the city and the industrial users. The program will pay for itself. There will be no cost to the state on this program. And additional users will help keep rates low for all classes of users currently. After we lost our meat packing plant, rates have increased 40%. If many of you remember, the Wilsons turned into Farmstead over the years. In about 2001, Farmstead burnt down, which caused the major loss of that packing house. This program will help us grow our tax base and will make us less dependent on future local government aid. And we are also working with Senator Klobuchar and Representative Walz on any federal issues that we're faced with this. We've also been in contact with Terry Coleman of the PSA, and his view was that it is not any violation since this plan is for a limited period and the wastewater plant nets a profit after the incentive. We've also been in contact with others at the state and have also talked with the governor and some of his staff on it. Everybody seems to be in favor of the plan, but what our city attorney is looking for is somebody to sign a letter to that effect. Having nobody coming forward with that, we are asking that this get placed in statute. So with that, I would answer any questions.
Any questions from members? Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And it always amazes me what we don't allow local governments to do. It just there's something new all the time. But I'm just kind of wondering here if this is specific then to Albert Lea or if this would be general to anybody.
Right now, Madam Chair, Representative Scalzi, this would be specific to Albert Lea, but I think it's a process that if we make it work, maybe there are applications for other cities and counties across the state.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murray, what about the, did you look at relief from the, water rate, for businesses having a progressively higher charge for water? Have you looked at that as being an option for the city to utilize? Because I assume that when you lost that one company, that they also were a major user of water in the city. So, getting legislative relief, being able to give them a normal payment as opposed to the if you use above X number of gallons, you pay a higher rate.
Representative Murray.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, the city and the Albert Lea Economic Development Arm have been looking at a number of issues with this for many years, and have finally come up on this as a plan to help. The problem with this is that we have so many fixed costs within this sewer and water that it has to be spread. And so all the residents, whether they're residential customers or industrial customers, have seen a huge increase. And so we're thinking this may address this. It won't harm anybody there. Matter of fact, it's going to make people, they should be a little better off going forward if we have another user out there to take care of some of this fixed cost.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I see in the bill that you've got the language that the rebate program shouldn't raise the charges for everybody else or the people that are currently there. And I like that because I don't want to see this as a way of shifting costs to the existing homeowners and existing people there. The only concern that, and maybe this is a concern, something that the city of Albert Lea is going to need to look at, is sometime in the future when they may have to raise rates because of costs going up, that this coming back and biting them when the residents say, "Well, you said you weren't going to raise our rates because," and blame it on the rebate program. But I, other than that, because that's just a concern that they may want to look at and make sure they're prepared for. But I like this. I don't see a problem with this bill.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone that wanted to testify for or against the bill? Any other questions for Representative Murray? Seeing none, Representative Murray, would you like to renew your motion?
Madam Chair, I would renew my motion that House File 2828 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion does prevail.
Thank you.
We're moving on to the last bill, Representative 2704. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 2704 be recommended to pass. And where would you like to go?
General Register.
General Register.
And proceed and be placed on the General Register.
So move. To your bill, Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I appreciate your
consideration of this bill today. I know I'm the last thing standing between you and or many, for many of you, you and your weekend. So thank you. This is a bill that is not new to the legislature. It's been considered in the past. In 2007, it actually passed the Senate on a wide bipartisan large amount of support. Didn't quite make it through the House that year. Subsequently, we made some changes in, I think it was 2009, and I believe Representative Simon carried that bill to move the primary up to August. But what this bill would do is move the primary from where it is currently in August to the third week and third Tuesday in June. The reason, you know, obviously there's some benefits to doing this. It provides a little bit of clarity in who the endorsed and who the nominated candidate is. Earlier in the summer, much of the campaigning happens at county fairs and at parades all summer long, and there is some confusion as to who that is when you've got multiple candidates in those venues, so I think it provides a little bit more clarity to that. I also did pass out a handout that shows you where the primaries fall in all of the other states. As you can see, that the state primaries on that on the back side of that sheet actually that shows it that has them grouped by month. The state primaries actually begin March 13th and then continue through September. June actually is the month that the majority of our neighbors have their primaries. North and South Dakota and Iowa have their primaries in June. And basically moving it up to June puts us just about in the middle of the calendar as opposed to towards the end. So I think it's something that would be beneficial, I think also because of the fact that the presidential primaries that are happening at that time are getting quite a bit of national attention. I think it would also improve participation in the primary, which I think is a very good thing as well. So I'd certainly appreciate your support and would stand for any questions.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Dowd for bringing this bill forward. He and I have collaborated on it a bit. I did carry the change 2 years ago to change our primary from September, which was, I thought, ridiculously late. It was tied at the time for the second latest state primary in the country, which was really unfair to our overseas military folks. I mean, that was really one of the key areas of focus for the bill, because you had a situation where we essentially had eight and a half weeks between the primary and the general, and by the time you certify the results, which sometimes you can't do if there's a recount, which there was a couple years ago in a statewide primary for the Supreme Court, it was very difficult to certify the results, print the ballots, mail the ballots, get the ballots back, and you had a lot of overseas military folks, well, overseas folks in general, mostly military, but they could be students, missionaries, others, business people, who were not getting their ballots back in time. And having that close window was way too close. So we moved it to August, but my preference had always been, and I carried the bill that you mentioned in 2007 to make it June. I thought that was kind of middle of the pack and reasonable for some of the same reasons that you said. I had a former representative Laura Broad and I both passionately believed in changing the primary. She passionately believed in August. I believed in June. She had the governor's ear, and so we went with August. But she's not here anymore. So I respect her, former Representative Broad, very much, and we kid each other about this quite a bit. So I always wanted June, and I'm happy to see that you're carrying this, Representative Dowd. I agree with you on the turnout as well. I mean, I think one of the problems with August is everyone's out doing fun stuff in the summer, and I think you see really low turnout. I know that some people say, well, campaigns are already too long. I think we all agree, as those who run for office, that they're too long. But I don't think we can control that. I think other kind of political market forces will control the length of the campaign. But whatever the length is, I think it's better for the state that more of that overall length focus on the general election and not on intra-party fights. I think people in Minnesota, whether it's for a county commissioner or whether it's for governor or U.S. senator, I think it's better to focus on those bigger clashes of ideas between and among various political parties and candidates, and not so much spend so much time of that overly long process just on the intra-party squabbles. So I really like the bill. I would say, as we talked about offline, as I found out the hard way when I carried the August primary switch,
there are a lot of moving parts here. There are a lot of dates that are pegged to the state primary, everything from when you can put your lawn signs up to a whole host of things. And so I would imagine that this bill is going to get much bigger, not smaller, because I think once the Secretary of State's office is engaged, they'll be able to tell you about a lot more that probably needs to go into this bill at some point. Most of it rather technical, and I would imagine unobjectionable to most members of the committee, but I just think that's something that we should note. But I thank you for bringing up the bill and the concept.
Representative Dowd?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Simon. I do also share your passion for the June primary, and I'm glad that now maybe you have the ear of the governor. So, but in response to your question, we had a conversation yesterday about those technical changes, and I took those comments and questions to Mr. Gearing from House Research, and it's my understanding, and he can certainly chime in if I'm misstating this, but when the bill traveled in, I believe it was 2009, to change it to August, I believe that those changes were made in statute so that rather than stating a specific date that then might have to be changed later, many of them were connected to X number of days before. So I think that the bill that you had in 2009 cleaned up a lot of that language. So it's my belief that, and Mr. Gearing indicated to me yesterday that this would basically be the final format of the bill. If anything else comes up that's just a technical change, we can certainly do that on the floor. But the basis of this bill should be pretty much the way it is now.
Mr. Gearing, is that true and honest?
Madam Chair,
he is a freshman.
Madam Chair, yes, that is true and honest. Representative Dowd, Representative Simon's bill in 2009 did make a number of changes to election provisions that instead of specifying certain dates, it allowed filing periods and other things to sort of float with whatever the date of the state primary would be. So Representative Simon's bill was substantially longer than this bill, but I think this bill still works.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And in the past, like when Representative Simon carried his June, the bill for the June for or the June primary, I had some concerns about it, and I know we moved it forward. Had to do with the Help America Vote Act that we had to move it forward so we had proper time. I still have some concerns about an earlier primary. Some of them, you know, and especially this year when we have our precinct caucuses in February, and there was pressure from the national level to move them to March. The time constraint of the time frame for local governments or local party units and local counties to be able to have their conventions between when we have our caucuses and when we have a June 1st primary. If we do get forced to move it to March, it compresses that to the point where it's difficult for local party officials to get that stuff taken care of, getting space, getting places to do it, more so in the rural areas. And so those were concerns I had in the past. I'm not opposed to this right as it sits right now. So, but I just wanted to bring forward those concerns that in my past, before I ran for office, I was very active in my local party unit, and sometimes getting just the accommodations to find a place to have the stuff that you need to have before you can have a convention, it's difficult when you have a very compressed time frame, and I have fear of compressing it even further.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dowd, in looking over the primary elections for my month, I've got a very specific question. It has Wisconsin August 14th and Wisconsin September 11th. Is that a mistake, or do they need to do it twice in Wisconsin to get it right?
Yes.
Representative Dowd.
I could offer my personal opinion on that. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I actually did look that up, and I can't recall right now what the reason was. They do have a provision in their statute that allows for two, and I think there's a reason that second one is triggered, and I don't remember that. Maybe House Research knows the answer to that.
Mr. Gearing?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I believe in Wisconsin the presidential primary is going to be April 3rd this year, and then the state primary elections will be in September.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The authors had anticipated my questions and was on the domino effect of the other statutory provisions, so I have no further questions.
Thank you. Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dowd, could you refresh my memory? When are the filing deadlines?
Representative Dowd.
It's my understanding that under this bill, they need to, and Mr. Gehring probably is a better resource for this, but it's my understanding they have to happen a certain number of days before. So this bill, I believe, would trigger them to late March, early April, and it's a window, and Mr. Gehring can probably be more specific than I can.
Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, the filing deadlines, this is one of the provisions that was changed in Representative Simon's bill to sort of float with the state primary. The filing period would need to happen between 70 and 84 days before the state primary. So with this new calendar in June, it would likely be sort of the last few days of March and early April.
Do you have a follow-up question? No. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dowd, thank you for this list. And to borrow a comparative used frequently in the education committees, if Mississippi can hold their primary in March, Minnesota definitely is capable of holding their primary in June.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I fear for the, I do know a legislator in Mississippi. I think he'd be disappointed in all this discussion about Mississippi. Is there anyone that wanted to testify for the bill or against it? Seeing none, Representative Simon, would you like to renew your motion?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'll renew my motion that House Bill 2704 be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
So moved. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And with that, we're done with our agenda, so we do not need to come back this afternoon. We won't be here until next Tuesday at our regular time. Tuesday regular time. And we will have to take up some bills to meet the that we get from the Senate and to meet the some of the other deadlines. So with that, meeting adjourned.